The Monologue.
You were supposed to get vaccinated today or turn in your paperwork today or you lose your job. And lots of people today lost their jobs. We've been talking to quite a few of them over the course of today and the last few days. We're going to continue to talk to a few or one person today who lost her job as a result of the vaccine mandates. But what's incredibly clear is that, you know, when I say we're wandering into uncharted territory, it is indicative of the impacts we've already seen happening all across the state. You can turn to Seattle, for example, where they ended up firing about 5% of their bus driving staff. That 5% sounds really small. Just 5%, just 20 bus drivers you fired, 20 human beings that you took their livelihoods away from them because they didn't want to get the vaccine, even though they may not have needed to, because they have natural immunity, for example. Maybe they were someone who were, in fact, vaccinated, but they chose not to turn over their private medical data. That 20 people, those 20 people that were fired from driving the bus, now accounts for a quarter of the Seattle school district routes being canceled. That impacts thousands. You have things so bad in the Washington State Patrol that they fired so many of the communications people, the ones who answer 911 calls, that if you live in Cowlitz County, if you live in Klickitat, wherever it is, those five surrounding counties, they're sending their 911 calls to be routed through Tacoma. That's how bad it is. But no interruptions. Ferries get cut by 40%. No issues. Hospitals are going to see a tremendous backlog of patients. No issues. We're supposed to pretend that there are no issues whatsoever. But at some point, you're going to realize there are, in fact, issues. At some point, the people who want to pretend, who want to put their heads in the sand, and then realize that when they have to go to a hospital for a prenatal checkup, they'll be told, sorry, we can't see you today. Can you come back in 4 months? I'll have given birth by then, hopefully to a healthy baby that you're not allowing me to get any sort of care for. More and more and more of that is going to happen. We haven't even talked about whether or not our utilities will continue to work. How many people are out of a job at our electric companies, our electric utilities? Seattle Public Light, how many people are out? Don't know. How many will be out at Bonneville? How many of those employees who are responsible for our electricity, how many of them will be out of a job because of Biden's vaccine mandate? We're supposed to pretend that it doesn't matter, but it does, because people's lives are being ruined and the people that they work for and with are being impacted as well.
The interview.
It is the deadline today in Washington State to get your vaccination paperwork into the system, depending on whether or not the governor's mandate applies to you. It applies to staff at all of the schools, be it kindergarten or college. And we're talking yet again about Walla Walla Community College, because so many of their staff members at this point, especially within the athletics department, seem to be getting the axe. Joining me on the line is someone who doesn't want to give in to this particular mandate. Her name is McKinley Renison. She's the athletic trainer at Walla Walla, and she joins me now. McKinley, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
By midnight tonight, you are expecting a letter that says you've been terminated. How does that feel today? How are you doing?
Well, you know, it's definitely been a rough, you know, I would say last couple of months since the mandate came out, a lot of uncertainty and confusion and anxiety. You know, today has been great because I feel like I have done absolutely everything that I can, and I've gotten clarity, and, you know, I've stuck to my guns, and that's really all that you can do in this situation. You know, this last week has definitely been a roller coaster of emotions, but really the athletic department and the athletes have been nothing being supportive. So, you know, throughout all of this tragedy, you know, the last week, it definitely has shown me why I'm in the profession. I do love athletic training, and I continue, you know, to love it, and I will after this, but has definitely shown me kind of what to expect, I guess, in the future as well.
Well, you guys are losing your head baseball coach, head volleyball coach, and that's just the people that we know of. I imagine there's going to be some other decisions from staff members to not participate in this vaccine mandate. What was your reason for rejecting the order from the governor?
So I personally applied for a medical exemption. As a child, I had seizures to vaccines, and ever since then, I have been getting medical exemptions through school, and any time that I ever needed one, my doctor has always signed off on it. So this is definitely something, you know, that is not new. It's not something that I'm just now standing with. It's something that I've dealt with my whole life. So I've had a lot of other medical issues in the past 6 years. I've had a lot of procedures done. I've seen every specialist and trying to figure out why all of these autoimmune responses have been happening to me. I have a lot of food allergies. So my doctors have advised me against getting the COVID vaccine because of either anaphylaxis or seizures. So it wasn't, you know, really a choice for me. I knew right away that it wasn't an option for me.
You told that to the school. What was the response?
You know, they just asked me facts and, you know, submitted two different doctor's letters. And similar to Justin and Chelsea, my exemption was approved. However, my accommodations were denied.
And Justin, of course, is the head baseball coach. Chelsea, his wife, is the head volleyball coach. And they'll be out of a job by the end of the day, it sounds like. You sound, and you know, you said you kind of had clarity over the weekend after a roller coaster of emotions. What was that clarity exactly?
You know, when I went through this whole process, you know, thinking and seeing how other schools have given accommodations for in-person employees, you know, I thought, oh, there may be a chance to be provided an accommodation. And when I did get my letter, you know, on the 8th, a couple Fridays ago, I was, of course, upset. But, you know, it was just good to have an answer because, you know, we've been kind of confused and had anxiety the last couple of months trying to figure out what was going to happen. And after getting that letter, it was, again, upsetting. But, you know, I wasn't going to change my mind. It's not really a choice for me. So it was just really nice to know so that way I could move forward and figure out what's next for me.
What is next for you?
Well, still trying to figure that out. You know, working in the state of Washington may be difficult. If there is somebody here that is willing to work with my accommodations, that would be fantastic. But I'm looking for outside state athletic training jobs because I love athletic training. And again, you know, if this experience has showed me how much support that I am given by my athletes. And so this profession is definitely the one I'm going to stick with.
Well, we wish you the best of luck. You're in a horrible situation that they're not going to accommodate you despite them accommodating you up until this point is ludicrous, mm-hmm. but really tells you what this is all about. This has nothing to do with public safety. They can pretend that all they want. But you're someone who obviously falls into, unless all of your doctors are lying, which I sincerely doubt, you very clearly fall into that category that should be accommodated. And they're just unwilling to do it at Walla Walla Community College, which tells you a lot about both the system and, frankly, the community college. Best of luck in the future. Hopefully you will land someplace that will respect your medical autonomy. McKinley Renison, at least for the next few hours, athletic trainer over at Walla Walla Community College. Thank you so much for stopping by.
Thanks for having me. Have a great day.
You as well. Now this.
The monologue.
Another sign-off from a Washington State trooper who was terminated today, a day where, remember, we're supposed to pretend that there haven't been a number of terminations and they won't cause any ripple effect across the state. This is Trooper Ashton.
1236, Everett. 1236. Added 7 and out of service for the last time. I'm being illegally discharged and refused a trial board hearing to which I'm entitled under RCW 43-43070. Jay Inslee is a petty tyrant, and I will never submit to the whims of a would-be dictator. In my short career, I suffered through the Washington State Patrol Academy twice, and it made me a better man. I've investigated collisions, chased cars, and arrested drunks. I stood shoulder to shoulder with many of you in Seattle last year as we held the line against violent riders emboldened by feckless politicians. Now I move on to other adventures. It's been an honor serving with you. To our dispatchers, other troopers, anyone who shares our air, you are what makes this agency and this district great. You know the value of the work you do. Don't be discouraged from doing what is right. Persevere because the citizens of this state need you. I don't know the origin of our motto, service with humility, but the fear of the Lord is instruction and wisdom, and humility comes before honor. Humility comes before honor. Thank you for serving with me and helping me get home safe to my family every night. God bless.
12-6. Thank you for your service. 15-12.
Now, just a few, even just a few weeks ago, Democrat politicians, including Jay Inslee, pretended to consider them heroes. These troopers, police officers, firefighters, nurses, school bus drivers, all heroes who were able to protect our community, serve our communities for the last 18 months. They were able to do it without a vaccine. They were being accommodated. But suddenly we're being told that right now, that this very moment, they cannot be accommodated, that it is more unsafe to work right now in front of a public that is 80% vaccinated than it was last year when there was 0% vaccinated. But they will have you believe this is about public health. It is not about public health. This is about getting vaccinated at all costs. They want 100% of the state and of this country to be vaccinated. But given what we know about vaccines, that yes, 100%, it protects you very, very well from death and from hospitalization, but it doesn't stop the spread of COVID. So what comes next? And they're not going to tell you that, but I guarantee you Jay Inslee is thinking of something. Some other way to control your life. And he's pushed these policies in a way that is so dangerous that we're not going to focus on getting vaccinated, even though I think that's the right thing to do for most people. Now we have to focus on making sure he doesn't take away more of our rights.
The interview.
Well, it's time. No jab, no job. We are hours away from it officially going into effect. Today was the last day for state workers, healthcare workers, staff at schools to turn in their vaccine paperwork. Lots of folks are saying no, about 8%, for example, of the state agency employees are saying no, not going to comply. So just a few hours, they'll be officially out of a job. Joining me on the line with his reaction to State Representative Jim Walsh, Republican from Aberdeen. You obviously have been hearing from a lot of determined folks to push back against this mandate. Where do things stand?
Well, they are, it's an interesting place, Jason. I mean, they stand as a significant number of state employees and healthcare workers and others, as you mentioned, are not participating in this edict demanding papers. And while the governor and some others are claiming that the number is something like 8 or 10%, I think it will vary dramatically by agency, by 100%. Which state agency you're talking about. And I think the numbers in some cases are going to be large enough to make an impact on how the agencies can operate.
You look at the Department of Corrections. I mean, when it kind of varies from jail to jail, but you have anywhere between 9 and 15% staff reductions that basically will happen overnight. And the governor wants us to pretend that there won't be any disruptions. But the fact of the matter is Washington State Ferries already saw a significant cut to their routes because of all of this.
That's correct. The ferries are a good indicator. Some of the school bus drivers around the state, school districts are in a real jam because they don't have any school bus drivers. Some of these transportation-related activities are going to be hurt, impacted by this. And, you know, Jason, that lines up with the larger kind of supply chain issues that we're seeing that translate into empty shelves at stores and other things.
There was a hearing today in Thurston County. A judge rejected the call for an injunctive relief and said that this is unlikely to succeed if it moves forward. Obviously, that's not good news for those of us who have been pushing back against the mandate, which, by the way, does not equate pushing back against the vaccine, which neither you nor I are actually doing. But that doesn't bode well for, you know, any of the other cases that are either being currently going through the system, but also the ones who are kind of thinking, can I file a lawsuit? Can I make an actual case?
Well, it was a blow. That was the case originally filed in Walla Walla County.
Yes.
That the state AG desperately requested to have moved to Thurston County. I think that the reason the state AG is always so nervously begging the courts to move the venue to Thurston County is Thurston County is favorable to some of the governor's and the state AG's arguments. So some of the strategy, I think, should be to keep some of these lawsuits out of Thurston County, frankly. They may get a fairer shake in other courts around the state. But also, this was a request for injunctive relief. That means immediate relief from the court over the executive branch. The ruling today does not address in any kind of detail the qualities, the deeper issues raised by the lawsuit, or issues raised by other lawsuits. So, yeah, it was a blow. But once that case had been moved from Walla Walla to Thurston, I think some of us had a bad feeling that it was going to end up in the governor's favor.
So where do things move from here? What are the next steps other than living with a lot of disgruntled former employees who are not eligible for unemployment and dealing with all the service cuts and interruptions?
Well, let's focus on that last bit first, Jason. And I think that's where the rubber's going to meet the road in the next few days, maybe a couple of weeks. There is going to be a lot of interruption of state service delivery to people, the taxpayers who pay for those state services. And, the governor is likely to do what he does, which is declare Super Bowl victory and move on to his next issue. But this isn't going to go away. The issues we've seen with the ferries, with the school buses, we're likely to see with some law enforcement. Mm-hmm. We're likely to see at agencies that deliver benefits or healthcare services or other things to Washington citizens. We're going to see interruption of services. And I think people are going to realize that this edict was damaging to the taxpayers and citizens and residents of Washington.
Yeah, the question, becomes at that point when they realize it's...
use whatever kind of rhetoric he wants, but words are words and deeds are what counts.
Yeah, the question then becomes, however, is once the folks who need to realize what the governor just did and the pain that it's caused and the problems it's caused, will it be too late? Will it be too late to reverse course? And my fear is we're clearly headed down that pathway because I don't know how many employees, let's say the troopers who gave their last sign-offs over the weekend, they're not coming back.
God, that was amazing.
Yeah, they're not coming back. They're not taking those jobs back if the state goes, sorry, we screwed up. Please come back. We're in desperate need. It's not going to happen. So we'll see what ends up going on once a legislative session starts back up. But, man, we got plenty of time before then to deal with the reality of Washington State. Jim Walsh, State Representative, Republican from Aberdeen. Thank you so much for coming on, my friend. Really appreciate it.
Always good to talk to you, Jason.
Now this.
The Jason Rance Show.
Always glad to see Seattle radio host Jason Rance.
It's always a pleasure to watch you and a pleasure now to host you.
Jason, I just love your coverage of what's been going on in Seattle.
Jason, this is as bad as it gets in America.
Jason Rance, great to see you. Thank you.
Long Form, presented by Northgate Rare Coins and Precious Metals.
Getting some mixed messages from the city of Seattle as to the staffing situation at the Seattle Police Department. Today is the last day to get all of those vaccine passports, all the paperwork into the department, or you're supposedly going to lose your job. Yesterday, the indication was along the lines of about 60 to 70 staffers, officers who have not turned in their paperwork And yet, not long ago, a little bit earlier this afternoon, we heard this from Mayor Jenny Durkan.
Only about 24 officers have not put in their paperwork.
So there's a little bit of confusion happening right now. Hopefully, who can actually alleviate some of the confusion is our friend Mike Solon. He is the president of the Seattle Police Officers Guild. Officer Solon, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Jason. Thanks for having me again.
How many officers have not turned in their paperwork, as far as you know?
Well, based upon how the department's messaging, as of this morning, there are just a few more to do so, but they're not really being forthcoming in the proper numbers. We're asking them, are they putting in that data push, the public messaging? Does that include the exemption officers, which is around 100? And does that include the current officers who are on the human resources unavailable list, which is close to 150? So we're well over 200 still. And for the life of me, I don't understand why they're delaying that type of messaging.
Well, I think we know why if that's the case, wouldn't they be delaying that because they don't want to cause a panic as to the staffing crisis that you guys are dealing with?
Well, there you go. I think you just wrapped it up succinctly, and I would agree with you. It's clear that this city has used these police officers that have protected this city during the pandemic and during the George Floyd riots. Mind you, Jason, I say this every time I'm on your show lately, that we are the modeled reformed agency per Mayor Durkan and President of the City Council, Gonzalez, just days before Floyd. Now, when Floyd happens, they walk back as their support as quick as they can. And here we are, we're on the front lines of working the pandemic for 18 months, working without vaccines to the point when it was available. King County Public Health said, you're number two behind firefighters. So our department said, discouraged us to get it to the point where there was a threat of almost discipline if officers were seen using their first responder tag to try to get the vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
And then you fast forward 18 months later, here we are. Now, apparently, we can't work unless we have the vaccine.
So do you think the city is purposefully misleading people on the numbers, or are you saying it's still unclear?
Well, I'm going to give it to you straight. And if they're not including the 100 officers that have asked for an exemption, which currently they're still not being accommodated for, I would say that they're playing a number game where they're not being forthcoming to our community. They started this process, and they should be the ones to properly message our community as to the calamity that this political decision has put us in.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that with the understanding that a majority of our membership, the police officers that are on the street, are vaccinated. But this isn't about who's vaccinated or unvaccinated. This is about personal choice and defending jobs. That's the union's role. And we're going to give it to people straight, and we wish the department would put forth the proper numbers out there so our community is read in without the political lens.
Officer Mike Solon is the president of the Seattle Police Officers Guild. He's joining me on the line, giving us an update on what staffing looks like at the SPD now that the vaccine mandate is in effect. Presumably, you've got the 100 or so, just the ones who asked for the exemption. It's my understanding that everybody who asked for an exemption had it approved, but then the accommodation denied. And so living in that world, and by the way, is that what you're hearing?
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing.
So living in the world in which they are not counting those 100 officers in that final number, 100 or so, and given that they're not accounting for the others that you just referenced that get it up to maybe 150 to 200. Obviously, mm-hmm. regardless of the way that the city wants to talk about the numbers, it still means we have a significant staffing crisis, if that's true, if they're not actually policing. So if they're not out in the field, what does that mean for the city of Seattle and public safety?
More dire predicament for our community, Jason. You're not going to have enough cops to answer the 911 call. You're going to have detectives who still have to wear the uniform into work to potentially answer the 911 call due to the lack of staffing. Then you're not going to have any follow-up investigations for the second part of a crime, which is to advocate for victims and then hold criminals accountable. And it's just putting on a Band-Aid on a hemorrhage. And again, this all comes down to politics. And this mayor continues to double down on the mandate, as we are well aware that a major city in this nation, Chicago, now those officers can use masking and testing to save their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And why can't we do that, especially when we've lost about 350 cops due to the political betrayal by our politicians, who I said just days before Floyd supported us. Now afterwards, apparently were the worst things to grace the uniform, that there needs to be a culture change. And then, you need a vaccine to keep your job. When we worked 18 months with masking and testing and social distancing when we were discouraged to get the vaccine. It shows you what type of predicament we are in this city.
You're obviously still negotiating with the city on what can be done. It seems like now you would be negotiating on behalf of, 150 to 200 officers, the ones who are impacted at this point, the ones who haven't turned in their vaccination passport. In an email that Mayor Jenny Durkan sent out to your members yesterday, she indicated that you guys were still bargaining, but then she also offered some of the details that were offered to some of the other unions. Was that direct bargaining, which I'm pretty sure you're not supposed to do?
That is the example of direct bargaining, and the city has a history of doing so. And it appears that this union, in comparison to the city, that we're the only professionals in the room where we continue to bargain in good faith. And it's quite clear that the mayor's office, with that example that you just referenced that's right in front of me, is the example of what direct bargaining looks like. And there's a significant reason as to why we haven't agreed to that temporary agreement that the other coalition of city unions got. I'm not going to get into it over the air here because I still believe in good faith bargaining when we compare it to the bad faith bargaining the city is currently conducting.
So then where do things stand as of right now? They're clearly not interested in bargaining, you know, directly with you the way that it's supposed to go. They're going around your back. They're trying to create some sort of discord. And by the way, regardless of how people feel about the process or even about anything that's offered by the city to these other unions, the specific way you're supposed to do this is not to create discord, which when you bargain directly with the members, that's what it's doing. So where are things at right now? What's the relationship?
Well, I'm always open to talk with them at any point at any time, as long as it's reasonable, and then they're respective to the that they respect the process. Well, right now we're respecting the process. We'll let labor issues iron themselves out, and we're making labor moves to make sure that the city is held to account to respect that labor process. And we look forward to future sessions. And I haven't ruled out that we have that we won't come to a deal. I'm still hopeful because jobs are on the line. This, like I said it again, this is not advocating for 100 to 150 or 200 cops. This is advocating for everyone, regardless of vaccination or unvaccinated status. We're not interested in playing the segregation game, which we're currently seeing unfold across our nation. This is about protecting jobs, even if it's one or if it's 200. We're standing with each other in solidarity. Our union is together on this. And people recognize when the mayor's office conducts them, behaves like this. Indeed, this does more of a disservice than they realize. And it's the city that hopefully an independent person can view their actions as being bargaining in bad faith, and we'll find some positive remedy moving forward.
Obviously, we want that to happen. And, you know, to your point, even though in the short term, it obviously seems like you're negotiating on behalf of a smaller group of folks. But long term, what does fully vaccinated mean? Does it mean you're getting a booster? How often do you have to get this booster? What if your doctor at that point says you don't need a booster? There are so many questions that still don't have any answers whatsoever, which maybe is why the mayor's office doesn't really want to negotiate in good faith here and just get the ball rolling. We've been talking with Mike Solon. He, of course, is the president of the Seattle Police Officers Guild. Mike, thank you so much for stopping by. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Jason.
Now this.
The Jason Rantz Show.
Jason Rantz, Seattle radio host, joins us now.
Jason, you're the perfect guest on this.
Jason Rantz, welcome back, Jason.
I see you often on other programs here.
Jason, what's going on?
Jason, thanks for coming on.
The Quick Hit.
I got a little bit triggered over the weekend when I saw some truly bad faith tweets getting sent in response to the videos that I posted of the Washington State Patrol officers who called it quits because of the vaccine mandate. And, you know, when tweets go viral, and the first tweet that I posted where Robert LeMay, the then trooper, told Jay Inslee to kiss his it was viral. It has over 1.4 million views now. It was liked and retweeted tens of thousands of times by a lot of folks, Donald Trump Jr., a lot of Congress members, some influential folks. But obviously, when things get that kind of widespread attention, you attract some of the trolls. And trolls are fine. You know, you kind of either delete them or mute them or block, whatever it is. But the people who pretend that they're not being trolls, that they are arguing in good faith, when they're in fact arguing in bad faith, there's just something about that that kind of sets me off. And when I saw the same talking point being used over and over and over again in the exact same way, it drove me nuts. There was a story that came out, and CNN had put it out there, that there more officers have died from COVID-19 than from gun violence. And they point that out because they're pretending that they care about the lives of these officers and that they're just pushing the vaccine on them in order to save their lives. But real quickly, when I started to look into the Twitter feeds of some of these people who are making these claims, you've got BLM nonsense all over the place. In some cases, you've got Antifa references that they have out there. They're not pointing this information out as a way to save the lives of officers. They're doing it to downplay the fact that they are being murdered by bad guys, criminals, the ones who are the activists who have gone one step too far, or the criminals that these activists have actually emboldened. They are pushing this out there to downplay the actual murders against cops. Because number one, when you look at this data, this is not data of cops who got COVID and died while on the job. This is not data of a bunch of cops who caught it while policing. Some did, sure. But that's not what the data is actually saying. These are people who happen to be cops who happen to die of COVID. They want you to think that being a cop puts them at this undue risk of getting COVID, which is not true. The data very clearly says it's not true. You had a UW study from, a couple months ago, that showed EMS workers who are out there, emergency medical services, they're out there, they're dealing with patients, in some cases not even being able to wear a mask. If you've got to give CPR to someone or mouth-to-mouth, you are going to have to take off that mask. So they showed an insignificant number of transmission of COVID. So obviously with cops, it's going to be more protected than with people who are actually dealing with patients who are sick at the time of the contact. Not necessarily with COVID, though. Now, beyond that, what's disingenuous here is you've got actual data that shows cops shooting unarmed black people is statistically almost nothing. From a statistical standpoint, it is almost nothing. It happens, absolutely. But the leading cause of death of an unarmed black person or an armed black person or just black people is not from cops, not even close. When you're talking about violence, not even close. Other black people kill black people at higher rates. Latinos kill black people. Whites kill black people. Asians kill black people at higher rates. People who are not cops kill black people at higher rates. Now, if you were to say that, they would jump in your face, the BLM activists. They'll call you a racist. And yet they're using that exact same argument as it relates to COVID. Now, are people who are cops dying of COVID? Yes, so are teachers. Doesn't mean going into a classroom is unsafe. Cab drivers also. Doesn't mean that you're unsafe driving a cab or an Uber. Talk radio show hosts have died from COVID. It doesn't mean that doing a talk radio show makes you somehow more susceptible to the COVID death. So looking at this is just so absolutely ludicrous. And the people who are doing it in bad faith, again, what, you want some credit? You think you've got a gotcha? You think you just did a gotcha tweet? You're not. You're a joke. These people are jokes. CNN amplifies this, but they don't talk about the attacks against police officers. You have things burning in the background of a live shot, and it's a mostly peaceful protest. That's what they do. And to do it in such a transparent way kind of set me off, I'm not going to lie. It really did. And I was calling out people that I shouldn't, because these are just dum-dums on Twitter. But I found myself pushing back pretty hard against some of these people, especially when someone with like a blue check mark would do it. And really, you know what? You should go ahead and check my Twitter feed and go to the video. It's not far down on my Twitter feed. In fact, just text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770, and I'll send you a link. Look at some of the comments. Most of them, because, you know, the people who amplified the tweet were on our side, on the right. But check some of the comments, and it really is a window into how ghoulish some of these people truly are. It is just rather remarkable. And this kind of thinking doesn't go away unless we confront it, unless we amplify our responses to it, unless we call it out. So do what you do. Check it out. React civilly. But I think it's time to call this nonsense out. Text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770.
The last RANTZ.
And as much as I believe that this commentary, the same message that I'm delivering over and over and over again to you, could start to get stale, and maybe it is stale for some of you, but there are a lot of people today realizing the actions of Governor Inslee has made this state unsafe, has ruined people's careers. Understand the anger that you're feeling cannot be misplaced. Do something with it. We have an election coming up. How many of you have already voted? You got your ballot. And if you didn't, you probably get it tomorrow. Have you already voted? Do you know who you're voting for? Have you done the research? Because there are a lot of races that are on the line. It's important that you go out and vote for, say, Reagan Dunn and Kathy Lambert. If you live in King County and you're in their districts, make sure you're voting for Kyle Myers, who's running for the Tahoma School District, school board director. There are all of these races, big and small, that will dictate the future of your communities and the future of this state. Ann Davison is running for Seattle City Attorney against a police abolitionist. It is so important to make sure that Ann Davison pulls this out. As much as I don't like Bruce Harrell, I'm voting for Bruce Harrell for mayor because Lorena Gonzalez is a police defunding lunatic. I'm going to vote for Sarah Nelson for at-will counsel because her opponent, Nikita Oliver, is an abolitionist. So much of this is on the line. Make sure you vote. Make sure you tell your friends and family to vote. Make sure you follow up. Make sure you do what you can to take this community back. And that's the last RANTZ.